Welcome to the Cowboy Chronicles. I'm Scott Wright of The Oklahoman, joined by columnist Barry Trammell. Oklahoma State football coming up quickly. First practice August 1st, players report July 31st. It's almost here, Barry. I can't believe the summer went by so quickly, but Russell Westbrook and the fellas helped out get summer through real quick.
Yeah, I remember when the summer would be full of college football talk, and it might have been anyway this summer, because it looked like a status quo summer for the Thunder, and then all of a sudden it was anything but status quo. So but now we've reached the point where we got to get back on the hot topics in Stillwater, particularly, which includes who's going to quarterback this team, new coordinator, second year defensive coordinator. It's still, you know, it's a little bit like going back to 13 when Mike Gundy brought in new coordinators, both offense and defense, and the quarterback position was still fairly wide open.
Yeah, things were definitely in flux that year.
And they had a great year. Dang near won the Big 12.
Now, looking at the offensive coordinator spot, you've got a column on Sean Gleason that will appear in Tuesday's editions of The Oklahoman. You got to visit at length with Sean Gleason. You and Bill Haston, was it, from the Tulsa World?
That's right.
In that conversation, what were your impressions of young Sean Gleason?
Well, I enjoyed. You know, he strikes me, guy that grew up in New Jersey, went to a Division III school, Williams College, been coaching at Princeton for quite a while. That doesn't exactly scream football junkie.
Right.
We tend to think of the Northeast as not a football hotbed. We certainly don't think of the Ivy League that way or Williams College. But the truth is, football junkies are grown all over. And every time I've heard Sean Gleason speak or talk to him, he's described himself as a football junkie. And I asked him about it, you know, adjusting to life in Stillwater, and he said, basically said, as long as I got football, I don't, you know, it's all the same to me, you know. So I found that interesting. So I think he likes, you'd think this would be obvious, but he really likes the football aspect of football.
Yeah.
Really loves the X's and O's and the teaching and the competitive stuff. So I think he's ready to try to get that OSU offense up and going.
Not to be stereotypical of someone who went to Williams College or coached at Princeton, but he seems like a little bit of a football nerd.
Yeah, exactly.
He loves analytics. I think that he's going to take that to a different level than what Oklahoma State has had in the past. That, I think, is going to be interesting to see what he does with that and how he uses it. I'm curious to get to talk to him some more and find out where the source of that came from. If he was just a stats guy from way back growing up, always looking at things like that, or if it was something that he developed when he got into coaching. So. Your thoughts, obviously, you know, this isn't a new offense. This is the Oklahoma State offense. He's coming in and learning their terminology and their plays and the things that they do, but bringing his own twist. But your thoughts on how well he fits in with the program, the coaches, all of that.
Well, I think he probably fits in fine. Princeton didn't play as fast as OSU likes to or wants to, so I think he's got to get up to speed, pun intended, on that. I think that's something that's not a surprise to Mike Gundy. Mike Gundy knew that. But the spread concepts and the firing the ball around, I think Gundy's pretty satisfied or comfortable with where Sean Gleason is on that. Whoever was going to be the coordinator was going to go through an adjustment period because he's going to be using two quarterbacks who literally have never played at Stillwater. What, Drew Brown took one snap?
Yeah, one snap.
And it's sort of interesting. The NCAA passes this new rule that says, hey, you can play up to four games and still redshirt. And Gundy responds by playing the two of them combined one snap. Made no sense to me. But, you know, of course, the Cowboys didn't play a lot of blowouts.
Right.
When they did have one early in the year, they went with Keandre Woodtee to finish up games. Probably a mistake in retrospect. There wasn't any great reason to not play those guys. I guess Gundy was playing some political game, and he knows more about what was needed than I do. So maybe it was necessary, but these guys have never literally have never played for OSU, and Drew Brown had the most of two seasons, excuse me, at Hawaii. So that's good. But, you know, I think there's going to be some quarterback coordinator slash program culture, program history adjustments to be made.
Yeah.
Because there's not a lot of continuity. There's just a pedigree of great offense in Stillwater, but there's not a lot of continuity.
The discussion of the two quarterbacks, I think, was an interesting one that came out of Media Day. Mike Gundy saying, not talking about playing two quarterbacks for a long period of time, but talking about using early games on the schedule as a potential proving ground for whoever might win this game, or win this job. Your thoughts on running both quarterbacks out there in the lights at Oregon State on Friday night on August 30th to start this season?
I think it's possible. I really do. For two reasons. One, I think you'd like to keep both guys happy, and I really do think neither one has. You know, if you watch a spring game, which is really all I've been able to see, there wasn't a clear differentiation.
Right.
I mean, I sort of liked a little bit more what I saw out of Spencer Sanders, but it wasn't a mighty gulf. So I think, you know, it could be an argument to be made. Hey, use both quarterbacks and see what happens. Plus, it turns out that Sean Gleason likes two quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
He used it on fairly regular occasion at Princeton. Even had a case where he ran two quarterbacks on the field at the same time. Found a way to make it work. You know, when your quarterback is Mason Rudolph or maybe even Taylor Cornelius, you don't want to do that because they could have held up physically, but they'd have been playing tight end or something.
And
you don't want you don't want your quarterback playing tight end. So you might be able to use a Sanders or even a Brown, you know, in the slot or something just to mess with defenses. And that may be something they try just as a lark, you know, throw it out there for Oregon State so that subsequent opponents will think, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe not use it. Maybe, you know, maybe do it when McNeese comes to town.
Yeah.
Or even you go over to Tulsa so that Big 12 schools say, well, we got to prepare for this. So I think that's not necessarily likely, but possible. That's what I would say.
Yeah. And, I mean, Sean Gleason had a guy who is now trying to make it in the NFL as a tight end. So it was a different type of player that he was using. You know, he had one guy that's an NFL quarterback and one that's trying to make it somewhere else. So a different situation. So it'll be interesting to see how they manage those guys and what they try to do there. How much of a plug and play type of situation is this for whoever comes out of the quarterback job because of all the talent that's around that guy?
I don't know. It's plug and play. You know, we've sort of come to expect quarterbacks
right.
at Stillwater to just be excellent. Mason mm-hmm. Rudolph was a big part of that. This reminds me. In fact, last year too. You know, 12, 13, and 14. Basically, between Brandon Whedon's 2 years and Mason Rudolph's three, were sort of hit and miss at quarterback.
Right.
Clint Schelf, there down the stretch of 13, really did a nice job. Figured that out really well. J.W. Walsh had his moments, then got hurt. But it was never never really settled. But they did have depth. They had guys they liked. Wes Lunt started the 12 season. To me, it feels a lot more like that. This is not necessarily a plug and play, or even last year. You know, Gundy expressed complete confidence in Taylor Cornelius, much to most of our surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, Corndog responded well. He was a good, solid quarterback. He wasn't an all-star, but he was pretty good. If either one of these guys can play as well as Corndog did last season, I think Gundy and Gleason will be happy.
I would agree. I think
Who do you think is going to be the quarterback?
I think ultimately it ends up being Spencer Sanders. I don't know that it will be decided before Oregon State, before we head up to Corvallis. I think there's a good chance that we see both guys there, maybe both guys the next week against McNeese, though I don't know how much that's going to tell you. But I think that it's going to take more than a few weeks in August of camp to make a determination on who is the quarterback. But I do think in the long run, I think Spencer Sanders is the guy. I think that the time that he's going to have had on campus by that point is going to have paid off, and you're going to see some more development from him. Drew Brown is what Drew Brown is at this point. I don't think he's making huge strides as a player, whereas I think that Spencer Sanders still has a higher ceiling and more room to grow. And I think that's going to contribute to him overtaking Brown for the job.
Sanders looked like he had more raw skill and talent. Just from that one day I got to see him, his decision-making seemed a little skittish, maybe not as careful with the ball as Mike Gundy likes. Maybe that's indicative of a younger player. I don't know. Rudolph was always pretty good about that, but we'll see if Sanders can be as well. If Sanders shows he can protect the ball, he's the quarterback, and no questions asked, that's the end of the discussion. But I assume that so far he hasn't really shown that. And until he does, the race, the derby, the competition will still be sort of up in the air. That's my guess on where we're at today in this quarterback competition.
You know, Mike Gundy has gone with two unique hires for his last two offensive coordinators. Mike Yurcich, obviously being from Shippensburg, Pennsylvania, and coming in and having a really impressive career before heading off to Ohio State. What were your initial thoughts of Yurcich at the time, and is Gleason a more advanced coach, or at least does he appear that way in your opinion, in your interactions with him to this point?
I'll have to admit I was a little bit more impressed with Yurcich early on than I was Gleason. Now part of that is this, and this is just bluntness, I got to go up and spend about an hour the first summer of Yurcich with Mike in his office, and we developed a relationship. I mean, we weren't fast friends or anything, but, developed a professional relationship and was very impressed with him and always had quite a bit of confidence in him after that. This summer, I was not able to go to Stillwater. In fact, I was first told, we're not going to do any interviews with Gleason this summer. Then I got a call and said, you know what, Mike Gundy's relented. You can talk to Gleason. But it was just a phone interview, and as you said, Bill Haston joined us, which was fine. But 30 minutes on the phone in a three-way conversation is not the same as spending an hour with a guy in his office.
Yeah.
So I'm a little less confident, a little less knowledgeable, a little less familiar, I would say, with Yurcich. I mean, with Gleason, than I was with Yurcich. That all could end. He could prove by halftime in Corvallis that he knows what he's doing. It could be 48-0. But I'd say I've got nothing bad to say about Gleason. Seems like a fine hire, but my confidence with Yurcich was pretty high in the summer of 2013. I would say.
You mentioned Gleason being, I don't think you've actually talked about his personality, but his personality seems like it fits well with what Oklahoma State coaches have been for a while now. Charlie Dickey, though we haven't talked to him, sounds like he is right along with that that culture that Mike Gundy likes to talk about so much. Even with all the changes on the coaching staff, do you see these guys blending together pretty well?
I guess there's a little bit of contentiousness, and you could speak about this better than me, but there were guys that would like on the staff that would have liked that offensive coordinator's job. And Gundy went outside the family to hire. And in fact, you know, I asked Mike about this at one point. Because if you remember, Scotty, in the spring, I think it was a spring, or maybe not the spring, it was in the fall, last fall, he said, you know, we've reached the point where if we have to make a change in this offense in terms of coordinator, and he was talking about Yurcich, saying he's going to get all kinds of opportunities. Mm-hmm. We won't keep him forever. He said, we've reached the point where our offense is so established and so set, and we've put so many people out into the netherworld, there's no reason why we would ever have to hire somebody who doesn't have Oklahoma State ties, mm-hmm. either a former player, a former assistant coach here, somebody that's worked on this offense. And then, lo and behold, a few months later, that opening came, and Mike Gundy did go hire somebody without any of those connections. So, you know, Casey Dunn, Josh Henson, these are guys that, you know, quite good qualifications to be considered for the offensive coordinator, and yet they weren't hired. So Gundy's talked about it. That's a little bit of a squishy deal. Josh Henson went ahead and left with A&M. Casey Dunn was given the title of associate head coach. Did I get that right? Mm-hmm. Associate head coach. And a raise, and he's a valuable member of that staff. But still, it's going to be a little bit, you know, Casey Dunn's a complete professional. Gundy has a history of getting his coaching staff up to speed pretty quick. But still, that's a little bit of a dicey situation that bears an eye on as we go through this season. Because clearly there's got to be some disappointment involved in that entire situation.
And, I mean, I haven't discussed this with Casey Dunn. So, I mean, this is just my take from the outside. If you're Casey Dunn and you watched Mike Yurcich come in and take 6 years before he got an opportunity to move on somewhere else, and now you're bringing in Sean Gleason, who's 34, and you know, making his first big step up to Division I football at the FBS level. If you're Casey Dunn, are you sitting there saying, okay, this is six more years before this offensive coordinator job could be open again? For a guy that wants to be a head coach.
That's a good point. Because Gleason's still young. He's like Yurcich, very young.
Exactly.
Got a lot of time. He doesn't have to jump at the first job that comes open. You're exactly right.
Yeah. So it could be, you know, it was important for Gundy and Holder to come up with a plan to keep Casey Dunn. But I don't know long term how well they're going to be able to keep him satisfied, because he does want to be a coordinator, wants to be a head coach, and that could be you know, something that ultimately lures him away sooner rather than later. So that, I think, is going to become a pressing issue, probably more quickly than we expect.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, Scotty, but for years and years and years, we were able to talk to the coordinators on Mondays in Stillwater. And I think that helped the fans. The fans got to know Glenn Spencer and Mike Yurcich quite a bit. This past season, no access to the coordinators except right immediately after games. Is that going to continue, do you think? Or what do you know if the fans are going to be able to hear more from these guys during the week?
I haven't been told anything specifically. Now, we did get a couple of instances to speak to those guys in the spring, which was different than the year before. So that was promising. I would assume that we'll get to hear from them some in August as camp is going on. But once the season starts, it's up in the air as to how often and when we'll get to talk to those guys. I'm going into things expecting that it'll be post game only again. But I don't know. I mean, like I said, Gundy changed things up in the spring, could give us some opportunities throughout the year. And you know, I've wondered too if maybe Casey Dunn could be made available on occasion in some instances where you know, having your associate head coach in front of cameras and microphones might be valuable. So I think that could be a possibility. That's all speculation on my part, but I think it could be possible.
Well, I think it's going to be an interesting year in Stillwater. The schedule sets up somewhat favorably, so if that offense can get off to a nice start, Cowboys could get off to a nice start. And OSU, three straight 10-win seasons, 15, 16, 17, fell back last year. But as we talked about, part of that was just a bunch of bad decisions and, and lackadaisical play. Three games they could have won, should have won. And so there's reason for optimism. OSU clearly is in the upper half of the Big 12, near the bottom of the upper half, but picked fifth, and they're picked behind a team I'm not crazy about, TCU.
Right.
So I think fourth clearly could happen for the Cowboys, and that's a 6-3 type record. Go win your three non-cons. That's 9-3. Nobody in Stillwater's sneezing at 9-3. I promise you that.
One last thing before we wrap this up here on the Cowboy Chronicles. All right, Barry, I'm taking the quarterback off the board. I'm taking Tylan Wallace off the board. I'm taking Chuba Hubbard off the board. Tell me somebody you're excited to see this fall in the Oklahoma State offense.
Oklahoma State offense. So no quarterbacks, no Wallace, no Chuba Hubbard. You know who sort of impressed me, sort of pulling himself up, was Landon Wolf. The longer he went, the more dependable he came. He sort of became like a safety valve, I thought, for Corn Dog. Somebody, hey, when I get in trouble, I can throw this guy the ball. He's a little guy. He didn't make a ton of plays, but he made big plays, but he made a lot of small plays. And he's a walk-on. He clearly loves football, clearly wants to play. I can see where he might develop into a player in the Josh Stewart, Josh Cooper family of slot blacks who can get in there and, sort of be a pesty type receiver. And if he did, that would be a great thing for OSU.
Yeah, that would be a really valuable asset, I think, for whoever becomes quarterback. I'm intrigued to see who wins the other outside quarterback or outside receiver position, whether C.J. Moore, Patrick McCoffman, Braden Johnson, one of those guys. But the guy that I'm really curious to see what type of development he has made from last year to this year is Jelani Woods. I think that this is a guy that's got NFL written all over him if all of the things come together correctly. This is a guy that had been out of the trenches for a while since he had moved to quarterback earlier in his high school career. Learning to block at this level is completely different than what he did when he was in junior high. So things have changed for him, but I think that he is making the progress in the blocking game. He's shown what a valuable asset he can be as a receiver, all the different things that they can do with him because he's so big. I think that this could be a big stepping stone season for him.
Well, and he's just got the size, and we haven't seen enough to know how his hands are, but there were no great red flags.
No.
Not like he's dropping a lot of balls. So, no, I think you're right. He could be a very, very valuable hand. Teams don't throw the ball enough to big tight ends, I don't think, especially near the goal line. And if the Cowboys could figure out a way to exploit that he could be headed for a big year. I agree completely.
All right, Barry, I think that'll wrap it up here on the Cowboy Chronicles. So thank you. Thanks to all the folks out there listening. Thanks to Paige, Todd, Dave, everybody for producing this and putting it together for us and getting it out there for all the listeners to take it in. For Barry Trammell, I'm Scott Wright. Thank you for listening to the Cowboy Chronicles.